Are you troubled by strange voices in your ears?
Do you experience feelings of dread in your basement, attic, or car?
Have you or your family actually listened to a spooky podcast?
If the answer is yes, don't wait another minute. Just pick up the phone and listen to the professionals.
Ghostcasters!
Our courteous and efficient submitters are on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural podcast listening needs as we count down to the latest release of the Ghostbuster series, Ghostbusters Afterlife 2021.
We're ready to believe you.
We have a gift. We see what no one else is willing to see. We do things others can't do.
Ghostbusters.
If there's a paranormal problem, we're the ones to answer the call.
Hello. That is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Something big is gonna happen.
The word we're looking for is apocalypse.
You wanna pay for this? Yeah!
The government's trying to claim the event isn't supernatural.
We don't want a panic. We don't want mass hysteria.
Get out of the city! Get out of the city!
I will kick the unliving crap out of you! And you! Especially you! Patty! Don't move!
You got a,
No, I'm tired.
No, listen.
I'm just gonna go ahead and take off. How about that?
I don't really think that's a good idea.
Nope. Going to take off. Don't piss off the ghost. Really?
Podcasters, assemble!
Hey everyone, this is Rob from And Sometimes Rob on the Geek to Geek Media Network, as well as EctoMX5 and the North Star Ghostbusters here in Minnesota.
Hi, my name's Tyler from Too Young for This Trek.
Hello, I'm Stephen White, co-host of Super Mega Crash Brothers Turbo and Cinema Salsa.
Hi, this is Justin Aki, graphic designer and one half a significant other co.
Yo, this is Corey from The World Is My Burrito.
Hey everyone, this is Eric Slater from Epic Fails of History, Comic Zombie, and Too Young for This Trek.
Hi, this is Zach from The Neatcast, Effin' Cultured, and Podcasters Assembled and Disassembled.
Hello everyone, this is The Questing Truck, and today we have just finished watching Ghostbusters, the 2016 remake.
And today, I'm going to be talking about Ghostbusters 2016.
And we are talking today about the 2016 reboot Ghostbusters Answer the Call.
Ghostbusters 2016, or Answer the Call, or whatever the hell you want to call it.
It's Ghostbusters 2016, or now it's been changed to Answer the Call.
Ghostbusters Answer the Call.
Shows you how much I know about this movie.
This movie is a shit show. I mean that in the kindest way.
So, this one's a bit infamous.
So, a lot of people hate this movie, and not me.
A lot of people really like to rag on the 2016 movie.
I think it's pretty okay.
Let me start off by saying that I enjoy this installment more than the other two, despite it being a terrible movie.
As we've touched on in past episodes, I love the first two movies. Probably a lot of that is nostalgia because I watched them so much as a kid. I know they're not perfect, but I did enjoy going back and watching them.
I'll admit, I tried to watch this movie before the Ghostcaster season, and I lasted 15 minutes, just after the mansion stuff.
But I actually kind of like it.
It actually had a lot going for it going into it.
It had been forever since we had a Ghostbuster film, so when it was announced that a new reboot was coming in 2016, even though it wasn't the third film, that we had been hoping that Bill Murray would finally get off his ass and agree to do, I was excited.
My first memory seeing this film, I have to assume it was in theaters.
I was eager to watch this film again for this podcast because it had been some time since I'd watched it last.
The first time seeing this in its entirety was for the podcast. I had seen bits and pieces of it on TV. I want to say my wife and I came across it maybe a year or so ago, and it was only partway through, and we watched it, and both of us felt underwhelmed by it. But I will say it did improve for both she and I. We had a much better opinion of it this go around.
In fact, due to the rewatch, the wife said, call her in the room after we got that past that point. because she suffered enough.
I'm trying to recall if I waited and saw it on Redbox or something. I know I've seen it multiple times. I saw it with the wife, but I don't think that was the first time I saw it.
Because of this, I went to see this movie on opening weekend, not only to support it during its time of need, but also to assess the movie for myself.
It's hard to say. In 2016, I think I was still living in Iowa?
But yeah, so the first time I saw this movie, I saw it in theaters when it came out, and I just had like some time to kill, so my wife was going to some wedding thing for a friend, and I just like needed to kill like 5 hours, so I went and saw a couple of movies. It was in a random town, never been to before, random theater, and out front they had like you could watch a movie for free if you donated blood. So I donated blood to see this movie for free, so I'm like going into it a little, like, you know, a little off from having donated blood. So I'm like, is that what made it funny? Was it just like not having so much blood made it funny? But no, it turns out it's just really funny.
Boy, that's hard to remember. Maybe I was back in Minnesota at that point.
Well, it didn't blow me away. I was thoroughly entertained.
I think my favorite part of this movie was actually when the trailer originally came out, promoting that this summer in 2016... a new Ghostbusters movie was coming out. When that trailer starts and it's the piano playing the Ghostbusters theme, man, that gave me goosebumps when I first heard that.
So I guess it's not a thing I remember well enough to say definitively where I was at the time. I certainly wasn't suiting up as a Ghostbuster yet. That didn't come for another couple of years.
I eventually got through it all, but it was an effort.
I definitely like it more than the second one.
But I rewatched it, and I like it.
Does it deserve, or let's just say that, is it a bad movie? No. Is it a good movie? Also, no. It is just a movie. So let's get into some of the details. I've taken notes. I've literally just finished watching it, so it's still fresh in my mind.
Obviously, the behind the scenes on this is the fandom sucking.
I know there's going to be a whole probably section of this episode where people will talk about the unfair hate that this movie got.
This remake of Ghostbusters was immediately maligned by the denizens of social media, all because the leads of this version were all women.
I actually think it's a little better than okay, but I had kind of like an unusual viewing experience the first time I saw it, so like, I don't know, people have just hated this movie so much that I just kind of like started to doubt if it was actually good, or I was just like trying to like it because of all the controversy around it. And I'm like, I want to support women or whatever.
Honestly, aside from the hate and vitriol for being a remake with ladies, it had stellar casting.
This is obviously an absolutely absurd reason to dismiss any film, let alone immediately hating it without even watching it first.
That was some bullshit. People just losing their mind just because you had four females as the Ghostbusters. And they weren't even playing the Ghostbuster characters that people were so protective of. They were different characters.
The same way as Star Wars fans and other fandoms, people got pretty hostile. They didn't like the idea that it was going to be an all-female cast, as though that matters at all, which I will say it does not. Obviously, the idea of it being an all-female cast might then mean that they're shooting for a female audience, which then might mean that the humor itself is going to be significantly different, which I do feel like it was. I feel like the humor in this, if not necessarily aimed at a female audience, because I can't tell you what a female joke is versus a male joke.
This movie is mostly, the humor is mostly fart jokes. I'm okay with that. Like, it's pretty funny fart jokes.
The film does its best to pay homage to the original film by hitting similar beats while also dancing to its own tune, which I greatly appreciate.
There's a video on YouTube that does a really good job of breaking down kind of the difference in comedy between this and the original 84 one, and sort of where the 2016 one might have misstepped a little in terms of that comedy. And they specifically use the example of the first time that they introduce a proton pack. And in the 1984 one, it's the scene in the elevator where, you know, they switch on and say, you know, we've never really had a successful test of this equipment. I blame myself, so do I. And about it being radioactive, and everybody kind of shifts away from it when it gets turned on. Versus the 2016 one, that turns into a giant look at the fat character getting smacked around physical comedy kind of thing. I feel like Ghostbusters 2016 was louder and had much more physical comedy in it, because there's next to none in the first one. The only real physical comedy in 84 comes probably from Rick Moranis, right? You know, stumbling around, running away from the demon dog. So, yeah.
So the amount of hate that this film got, even before it was available for people to see, I just don't understand it.
It's the first movie where we're starting off with a place that is allegedly already haunted. And there's another painting.
So the movie starts in New York, because that's where you always want to start with a Ghostbusters film. And we're in an older, old haunted house, which Gabe from The Office is giving a tour. Hey, Gabe, how you doing?
This movie has some really good set pieces. There's like the guy giving the tour of like the old home or whatever, and it's like it's got this basement where somebody was like locked up and they died and no one's been down there. And then he like makes it look like something's like fallen off the shelf, and it's revealed that, you know, it's something he set up every time just to be spooky. But then real spooky things happen, and
he's telling all sorts of spooky stories about the former mistress of the house, and oh, we see a candelabra fall over. And then after the tour, we find out that, oh, Gabe's just kind of a con artist. He set it up so that it was remote controlled to tip over. But all of a sudden, some spoopy stuff starts happening. And oh gosh, there is a ghost.
I liked it. And then there's a joke about him like shitting his pants. And I like a good fart joke.
And another oozing floor.
And he runs downstairs to the basement, which is now unlocked. And then there's cracks and slime coming up out of everywhere, and he's running up the stairs, and oh god, it's gonna get him! And then the logo! Similar to how the original Ghostbusters started, just a new take on it.
I don't know that it's as spooky as the original Ghostbusters.
The basement door magically and silently being open is great. That's one of those things that, why didn't they do more of that in these movies? It's a ghost movie. Do ghost things.
And I don't really know why, because like the ghosts look pretty good. The effects look great.
The ghosts in this movie are another element I really enjoyed.
Also, the first ghost they meet, which is kind of a, you know, 18, you know, Victorian era woman that was trapped down in a cellar. And so she's very kind of regal looking in that way, you know, very Victorian looking, the Victorian dress, a look, everything like that, you know, pretty and so forth. You know, until she screams or whatever. But that ghost was really cool as well.
The picture of ooze uncontrollably streaming from the nose and ears is as terrifying as it is humorous. This is a lot better than, like, the dumb Ray takeover at the end of 2.
In terms of my favorite ghost, apparition, specter, or spirit.
Most of them had distinct personalities, or should I say had. And in some cases looked pretty ghastly.
So I mostly like all of the characters in this movie. I don't remember any other names.
I actually really like the new cast.
It was then announced that the reboot was going to be starring four alums from Saturday Night Live: Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, and Leslie Jones, which I've seen them in other films. So I was interested to see where it was going to go.
Paul Feig expertly cast Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, and Leslie Jones because of their comedic talents and sharp wit.
Melissa McCarthy is probably the only actress I don't really like. I haven't seen any film that I just like care for her in.
I kind of think Melissa McCarthy is annoying often in films, but she was great in this.
But honestly, I do take issue with most of their performances in this movie, but can't blame them for someone else's direction.
Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, Leslie Jones.
Melissa McCartney had been in some darn good stuff. Kristen Wiig had been in some both serious and comedic roles, and has Academy Award nominations.
I think they all do a really great job with what they're given.
And I am really not liking Kristen Wiig's character in this movie. Just, I don't like the direction. It's like too awkward. And what we're going to find out through the rest of this movie, it's too SNL.
I think the behind the scenes trivia then is simply that a lot of this was improvised, which allowed the actors to really kind of flex some of their muscles and really play characters the way that they wanted them to be.
And instead of trying to rein them in, he allows them to play to their strengths, letting them ad-lib their dialogue with their own flavor, which helps the film be as funny as it can be.
which in some ways I think was a strength. Kate McKinnon's character is by far the standout in this film.
I think Kate McKinnon is one of the most versatile female actors in recent SNL history, probably only behind Wig herself.
The next Ghostbuster we're introduced to is Holtzman, and I very much despised this character all the way throughout.
So my favorite Ghostbuster is obviously her character, because who doesn't love Holtzman?
Especially Kate McKinnon, who plays Holtzman.
She's very annoying, very kind of gross, haphazard, unprofessional, but she is the Egon stand-in, believe it or not. You know, as much as I liked Egon when I was a kid, and still like Egon, she's the one that creates all these devices, and she's the engineer. That's all she really does.
Generally speaking, if you see a female Ghostbuster cosplayer wearing a 2016 suit, they're dressed as Holtzman. Kate McKinnon's job in portraying this character was phenomenal. I think all of her decisions in terms of her improvisations were right on. I think Kristen Wiig's character was fine, but Kristen Wiig really excels at that it's so awkward, so we're going to laugh at it kind of humor. And I felt like there was so much of it.
The story is pretty good too, in my opinion, allowing the characters to have motivation to be paranormal investigators beyond just wanting to. Abby and Aaron had an encounter earlier in their lives, and it led them down this path. Furthermore, Aaron's rejection to this encounter, then sudden return into believing in ghosts, is what sets off a chain reaction of events that gets things started for them.
Also, fun side note, for fun, last year I read the novelizations of the three Ghostbusters films, and the novelization of the 2016 one is by far the worst. The novelization for the 2016 Ghostbusters Answer the Call is horrible.
I like how the format is already like flopped on its head. The disinterested character, Dr. Gilbert, is being shafted by the ones who actually give a damn about the project instead of them just bowing to her every will.
The movie absolutely has its saving elements. You know, the wife likes this movie. One of our female members, it doesn't really matter that she's female, but one of our female members in her Ghostbuster group loves the 2016 film. Her costume is an Abby Yates costume. So there are people that like it, and I never want to take it away from other people that they really enjoy the 2016 Ghostbusters. Like, that's fine. It's a movie. It's there to be entertaining to you. But when you look at the novelizations, which are usually based on earlier versions of the script, you see just how bad of a start the film had and how much better it must have gotten in the hands of its cast. It feels like an early 2000s Judd Apatow film where everybody is allowed to improvise as much as they want. And so you have, you know, the 40-year-old virgin, where there's just scenes where you know they're just improvising and just riffing off of one another for 3 minutes straight.
Way too SNL for me.
Like, that's what a lot of this film felt like, which is interesting because, again, to go back to a thing I was saying, they were trying to recapture Lightning in a Bottle again, and so they tried to stack up, let's get Saturday Night Live alums, seasoned actors who are excellent at improvisation. Like, that's what the original cast was, right? It was, outside of Ernie Hudson, you had people from the improv world, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Harold Ramis.
We meet Dr. Aaron Gilbert, who's played by Kristen Wiig.
Very much a normal, you know, a scientist. Matter of fact, she's talking about merging the quantum and, you know, and quantum with the normal physics, which is the theory of everything that all scientists are trying to create right now in the real world. But she somehow solved it, supposedly, what she says. Or if her calculations are correct, I have solved this. You know?
Erin is a professor at Columbia University, and she's going to be going up for tenure. And we find out that her boss is the old asshole from Game of Thrones, a guy that was taking his shit and then just got shot by a crossbow by his son. Spoilers if you haven't seen Game of Thrones.
She's very likable. I at the start of the movie, I liked her the most. As the movie progressed, she started getting a little bit weird on me. But she was still fine all the way through it.
It leans toward credible because no one believes that ghosts are real and everyone assumes they're frauds.
Hey, this Zedmore did more for this film than the Zedmore in the previous film did for either of those.
Rounding out with Leslie Jones in a more fleshed out, I would say, good version of the Winston character.
Oh, hey, Patty has a role in this movie, as opposed to just kind of being the butt end of whatever bad joke they thought of in the moment.
We then head down into the subway, the MTA, where we meet Patricia Tolan, or Patty, who's played by Leslie Jones.
You have Patty. She's not a scientist. She kind of gets pulled in because she's their first customer. She's bombastic, for sure. But, you know, kind of larger life, very, very assertive, knows who she is. She does a lot of stuff that's for laughs. But I think of the four Ghostbusters, she's probably my favorite. Abby is a very close second. Aaron's not quite as close a third, but she's way better than Holtzman.
Patty is just like Winston Zeddemore in the sense that she is the everyday person who is not an expert in the paranormal coming in to join the team. But unlike Winston, she seems like she's actually contributing a little bit more. I mean, Winston was there as an extra body. Patty is bringing apparently the car, the jumpsuits, and an overall vast knowledge of the city of New York and the history. She seems to know everything everywhere about New York City. That's impressive and definitely would warrant having someone like that on the team.
Even Patty joining the team feels more natural than Winston just looking for a job because she saw a ghost.
And also having a character who inherently knows the history of New York. Like, yeah, sure, it's not exciting writing, but neither were the first two.
I mean, this should have been a no-brainer, but it's terrible.
I think it was about this point that I noticed that the SNL bits were taking not just a side part in the movie, but they were starting to show up. And it was the whole beef that Abby had with the wonton soup and how worked up she got. And then the ghost fart, which apparently may not have actually been a fart.
Like, everybody was kind of being an increased, like, 150% of their sort of typical character that you see them play in other movies. And it was just Kate McKinnon's ended up being the one that everybody gravitated towards.
This is one of the few cases where I think I might actually like the theatrical cut more than the extended cut.
I think the biggest detractor was the pacing. Every scene was set up for each of the women to improv, which isn't terrible, but they don't need to keep every single take. Honestly, half the scenes went on for about 3 minutes longer than they needed.
I think it's because they left in a few awkward comedic moments that kind of hurt the pacing of the movie.
Starting from the beginning, when they spent 10 more extra minutes in the lab, the extended slime sequence in the mansion, there are like 4 extra scenes in the subway that could have been cut. I mean, they didn't even go back a second time. Just go once.
I did find the movie to be very slow getting started. They didn't really even get to catching ghosts until the halfway point of the movie.
We get some more bits, and every time they go into a bit or this just offhand argument or joke, it pulls me out of the scene that's happening, and I can't. It takes me forever to get back into it because here I am invested in the story at hand, but then we're just going to take a left-hand turn and do a bit for 20 seconds and pull the scene to a screeching halt, but then we got to get the whole scene going again. And for me, it doesn't work.
When they finally do get around to actually doing their first actual ghost bust,
Aaron, Abby, and Holtz begin the investigation. We have the little slime encounter, similar to the first film. They do eventually encounter the malevolent woman in white, the original ghost that went after Gabe. You know, I will say the special effects and the ghosts, they look really good in this film. The special effects were great.
There's also one known as the electrocuted ghost, which I like. I like that idea.
And then we've got a prisoner who was electrocuted is now haunting the subway.
Subway ghost was more of somebody that had been basically in the electric chair. That ghost they tried to fight with like basically prototype weapons, and of course it fails, and they almost get themselves killed by a subway train.
Kind of, it's sort of a callback to the Scolari brothers. This is the way that they died, and so their ghost kind of carried that with them.
The scene in the subway with the electric chair ghost was actually pretty cool.
It's like there's fart jokes, and then there's Chris Hemsworth. He's so dumb.
And the second best Chris Hemsworth.
Speaking of funny, Chris Hemsworth is downright hilarious in this flick.
Abby and Holtz begin working on technology to track the ghost, and they hire a character. Is he a jock? I don't know. Kevin Beckman, just this very athletic meathead to be their receptionist, who is played by Thor. I mean, Chris Hemsworth.
I love Chris Hemsworth as the secretary in this one.
I think a lot of the Hemsworth stuff is fun in this one, is fairly clever.
I think Hemsworth was also a good character used stupidly.
I've heard that he was intimidated by his co-stars since comedy is their forte, but he holds his own with the amount of insanity that comes out of Kevin's mouth.
Now, I'm not sure the reason why they decided to make Kevin such a blockhead, like a legitimate idiot that you're not sure how he could actually live life. But that's his character.
The other, I'm going to go ahead and put in Kevin, because he plays quite a large role in the movie. He's not really a Ghostbuster. He's the receptionist. He's the Janine of the group.
He's a lovable idiot, and he's devoted to them to a fault.
The man has proven he can be funny time and again.
And partially overused.
So I think I'm just going to give it to Chris Hemsworth, who I imagine was also improvising a lot and just doing a really good job.
Half of his scenes could have been cut.
He is also a character I despise because he's a... And this is kind of a flaw with the film overall, but he's a moron. He can't... He's their receptionist, but yet he can't answer a phone. I mean, it's almost... He's stereotypical to such an extreme, it's actually annoying, of a dumb jock.
When he says things like, an aquarium is a submarine for fish, that was good, but it didn't add anything to the movie besides making him dumb as shit.
But he's cute, so Aaron's like, and this is why I kind of think Aaron's more kind of like shares the Venkman vibe, is she's like gushing all over this guy because he thinks he's cute. Which, you know, fair enough, you think you're cute or whatever, but it kind of got a little bit, it just kind of went on and on and on.
And Aaron is all puppy dog-eyed at him.
And it was too much.
I'm guessing she's the Venkman of the group, or supposed to be. At all points of this movie, all four characters seem like they're trying to be sarcastic like Peter was in the first two films.
But Kristen Wiig's character, I was a bit iffy about the first time I saw it, because similarly to Venkman from the first film, I didn't like how he's like creepy with women, and she's exactly slightly less creepy, I guess, to Chris Hemsworth's character, Kevin. I remember his name. It's Kevin's an easy name. But yeah, I didn't like that at first. But having the context of the first film, I guess they were kind of trying to play off of Venkman's character. But instead of making her creepy, I mean, she's still creepy. They made it more comedic by having her come off as like desperate. I like it better. I don't love it, but I like it better than when I'd seen this in theaters.
The weird subplot of Aaron being all about that muscle man still doesn't make sense. She's a freaking scientist with multiple degrees, and she's just like, yep, sexual harassment, that's my next thing.
He's a little over the top at times, but he absolutely steals the show.
One of the like checklist items that didn't really work for me is the firehouse.
We do end up at the fire station at the Hook and Ladder, and it is $21,000 a month for them to rent that. Is that an accurate number? I don't know, Justin, you usually look up all this stuff. Did anyone look up these details? I am far too lazy and don't have the right knowledge to look up what that would be.
The best lines in the movie, when they're looking at the fire station and the realtor says the rent is $21,000 a month, f*** you. That, like, she opens up right away. Like, and she apologizes, but like that was my explanation. I mean, it's New York City, but still, yeah.
I thought it was kind of funny that they couldn't afford it, but just like, I don't really know why they wanted the firehouse necessarily, other than that it was a reference to the first film.
Another great bit was the Chinese dumplings and shrimp and wontons thing. It was funny, and then they destroy that guy's bike, but then he just disappears midway through the movie, which makes me believe they probably had filmed him more and they dropped it for time. Of all the things that drop.
I kind of liked that they were above like a Chinese restaurant or whatever. I thought that was funny. Like there was a lot of good humor that came out of that.
So they set up a temporary shop above a Chinese food restaurant.
With like Chris Hemsworth thinking they like ran a restaurant. There was like one point, like probably one of my favorite lines. He's just like, guys, I think we need to close down the restaurant. We've got no customers.
Also, the mayor's right-hand woman is in the restaurant, and I think one of the Ghostbusters is trying to get in, and the lady comments, oh, she thinks it's a sliding door. She thinks they're all doors. That's sad. She's a scientist.
There were at least like one or two bits that made me laugh pretty hard. I think maybe the hardest I laughed in the movie was when Kristen Wiig's character is trying to explain to, I think he's the mayor of New York, that like what's about to happen with all the ghosts and stuff. And you just hear like this rumbling, like, you know, like an earthquake's happening or whatever. And then it's a trash can. I think she did a good job looking crazy. And I thought that was a great scene.
This film is also littered with numerous appearances and cameos from other amazing actors and comedians. It was nice to see cameos from the original cast, although I could have done without them since most of their scenes were inconsequential, making their appearances nothing more than fan service.
Not even the character actor casting, like Silicon Valley's Zach Woods, a surprise appearance by Andy Garcia.
Oh my god, it's the guy from Mad TV. Let's look at what he can do.
Omar from The Wire, aka Michael K. Williams.
I'd actually forgotten Michael K. Williams was in this flick, and seeing him was heartbreaking considering recent events.
Rest in power, my man.
I really dug Ed Begley Jr.'s appearance and the subsequent joke that accompanied him. Ed Mulgrave is dead, but they meant Ed Sr., not Ed Jr. See? Simple but effective little joke.
Granted, there's some good one-liners and bits that are used wonderfully. The part with the subway where Patty says the ghost is the third scariest on the thing on that train going to Queens, that was pretty good.
Okay, the comedy bits are increasing. This is going to go on throughout the entire film, isn't it? It is. Okay.
Still terrible.
There's a lot more tech talk in this one.
Another thing I really dug in this flick was getting to see the development of their equipment.
It's actually really enjoyable watching the cast grow and learn how to use their tools instead of a montage or just magically knowing everything, yet somehow still sucking at their job.
Where they really kind of focus more on the gear and the gadgets, which is okay. I mean, because when you, as a kid, you know, the proton packs are just so cool. The gadgets were so cool, but they don't really talk about them so much.
Holtzman is constantly whipping out new toys based around whatever pseudoscience playbook they had, and actually seeing test runs works in opposition to the original film where they admitted to doing none.
And this is another problem I think the movie has, is it relies on nostalgia for some of the jokes and as a reasoning for why they do certain things. Like, they felt like they really needed to explain the technology and really go into it deeper than they did in the original movie. Like, we had to really, like, almost, like, point out this is this part, and this is what it does, and supercharges this part. It's too much detail for what was needed.
And each device she concocted was pretty badass.
There's certainly stuff in here that is a lot of fun, things that I feel like take from maybe the cartoons a little bit, especially the Extreme Ghostbusters, the idea of the sort of handheld Neutrona wand turned handgun kind of thing is fun.
I also like the suit-up scene towards the end of the film, where the girls become badasses, but that still didn't save the whole third of the movie.
The use of the different ghost-busting gadgets was pretty cool and definitely inventive.
Basically, we had to stop the story to do that, and they do that a lot. There's several scenes, there's two scenes where they're testing the stuff. They felt the need that they needed to explain where the logo come from. Now, that particular scene was kind of funny, where a guy basically vandalizing the subway. You know, they felt the need to like explain that.
I also think that in conversations I've had with other podcasters, the technology reveals were good.
No more just catching ghosts, but actually obliterating them. If you can do that, why not just do that? It's a really wise addition to the mythos.
The scene introducing them was too long, but it was fun seeing how some of the stuff worked. Like, it was actually explained and not just mumbo-jumbo nuclear reactors.
I liked the way that they did some of the ghosts and stuff, but it's also, man, there's some really weird stuff in this movie.
We've reached the second series of weapons, and I am over the description and learning about them. This should either not have been inserted or should have just been mentioned and thrown into a scene.
They're using their proton streams to disrupt their ectoplasmic corporeal form, whatever, if you will. And so they kind of explode the ghost knowing that they're going to come back rather than actually capturing them. And I think that's sort of the problem with the big army and the way that a lot of things treat the proton packs and the Neutrona wands versus the original film, where like they cause a bunch of damage, but really what they are is a high energy stream that's intended to disrupt the ghosts and then sort of wrap around them and lasso around them so they can be brought down into a trap versus, you know, ghost guns.
The ghost chipper was pretty fun, and the warp cannon thing looks like a gun from Team Fortress 2 that the engineer uses. Spy, sap on my sentry.
The very light introduction of the coveralls is, like, wonderful. because they just magically know that they needed that in the first movie, and in this one they're just like trying to do this in their daily stuff. Yeah, that's good.
Another sort of pet peeve that I have with this one, not to continue to hate on this film, is the way that they treat the technology. They throw very basic techno babble, and again, reading the novelization of it, you see how it's very much sort of nonsensical, whereas Dan Aykroyd really cared. Like, he really, in his mind, had the actual science figured out of how this would work. Even though nobody else really cares, there was something to that language and the way that it was presented, and how every single part of their, you know, tech has a purpose and that kind of thing.
We can actually watch the makeshift group turn into something instead of them magically having an amazing marketing team and a montage. The group uses more than just the backpacks. Instead of hiding different weapons in a montage a la Ghostbusters 2 and then like never showing them again.
I don't think there was as much of that in the 2016 one, and I felt like you lost a bit of it instead, and it was just...
And they've already developed new tech, like brand new tech that's going to, you know, that even the original Ghostbusters didn't have. It's all within the span from the first prototype, upgraded the backpacks, created four new weapons.
It's like people, you know, their movie, they have a hacker who hacks by typing really quick. Like, it was that version of scientists in the 2016 one, as amazing as Holtzman was.
Ecto-1 kind of just came out of nowhere.
I also really like the look of the new Ecto-1 and the whole backstory with it being an actual hearse that they retrofitted.
They didn't really go into too much detail about Ecto-1, although getting it was fine. Because, you know, that happened in the first movie. Here's where it got...
If I didn't gush enough in the first movie, I'd just like to say that I love hearses. So seeing the ghost hearse just makes me feel great inside.
It's funny still that it's a hearse, but it's a joke we've already told.
But I also like how it was a hearse that I don't remember the character's name, but that she borrowed from her uncle, and then that comes back in the end. I thought that was kind of funny.
If you're a fan of this podcast
and want to see it continue,
help support us on Patreon,
where you can unlock tons of exclusive content,
including, but not limited to,
movie commentaries,
ad-free versions of our promo specials,
extended cuts,
early access to new episodes,
behind-the-scenes clips,
first access to merchandise,
blooper reels,
and even a chance to vote on what we cover next on our Podcasters Disassembled episodes.
Just head right on over to patreon.com/podcastersassemble.
That's patreon.com/podcastersassemble.
Link in the show notes.
We get the Ghostbusters song, which is Fall Out Boy and Missy Elliott, and I don't like this version. I like the original. I
hate to say it, but the rap in this movie is a lot better than the one in the second movie.
Walk the Moon covers Ghostbusters, and that's freaking awful.
The Ghostbusters recreation song by Walk the Moon is not good.
Really up in their game.
The film leans back into the horror comedy vibe at times, which I really appreciated.
I forget how, but they figure out that Rowan and these pieces of equipment are now going to be at this concert where Ozzy apparently is going to be. So they load up into Ecto-1 and make their way down there. This is the proving themselves scene, similar to the hotel scene in the original movie.
But when they do their first ghost bust at a concert.
Another good set piece is the metal show, or I think it was supposed to be metal. It was like the rock show.
Wait, scratch that. Most of the music sequences in this movie suck.
I do really dig the Ozzy reference at the rock concert.
The club where Ozzy makes a promo? That song wasn't metal.
It's cheesy, but I like it.
Yeah, I thought that worked really good.
And now there's one scene in that where Patty's kind of going down in there, and you know they all split up trying to find whatever this ghost is. She basically pokes her head in a room full of mannequins, and she says, room full of nightmares. I'm out.
And I'm with Patty. I am creeped out by mannequins, and I would not be walking into a room full of mannequins.
That's pretty much what I'm thinking, too. You look in there, a bunch of just mannequins. And, of course, one of them actually comes to life and chases her a little bit.
Oh, the ghost is a giant green demon dragon thing. Okay, that's... Well, at least it's not a Muppet.
Now, there was two things in this whole sequence that really took me out of it. And one of them was Holtzman. There's one part where Aaron's going through one of the areas, and Holtzman's there acting like a mannequin. She's got a wig on or whatever. It's like, it wasn't scary. It wasn't funny. It was just obnoxious. We're trying to find this goat, and here's Holtzman goofing off to an unbelievable degree.
Favorite ghost or apparition? I think I'll go with the demon ghost that was in the concert.
And then another part that really takes me out of it, and that's my problem. A lot of times, like, we'll be building momentum, we'll be building tension and kind of like cool stuff. I'm getting invested, and something will bring me out of it.
The ghost heads upstairs where the concert is happening, and the Ghostbusters pursue.
Well, in the middle of the fight, the ghost basically like perches on Patty's shoulders, and she gets frozen like that. And
I did like that whole segment. I did like the bit with the ghost demon sitting on Patty's shoulders.
That said, the dragon demon ghost felt like it belonged in another flick.
That actually did work for the movie. It didn't feel like it brought it to a screeching halt. It fit kind of with her character and the general scenario.
Basically, they're having this kind of an extended gag scene where they're trying to tell her that it's there. She's like, nope, I don't want to hear it. I'm just going to slowly turn around and walk away. And basically, this ghost is sitting there patiently waiting for the whole gag to be done. That wasn't good. Now, you know, we had to stop everything to do this gag, and then they get back to what, you know, probably should have done doing at the very first.
It was a cool design, and it worked for the venue it was placed in, but it didn't feel very ethereal, despite its glowing aura.
Watching this movie, it begs a question similar to Ghostbusters 2. What determines if you are a human ghost, a demon, a creepy Muppet? What happens? Why?
And it was like cool because it was like they're like, you know, the like beams from their proton packs, like it was like a cool light show. I thought it was kind of weird that the talent, you know, like the band went along with it and they weren't like freaking out, because like I can get the audience being like, this is like the coolest thing we've ever seen, but like the band should be freaking out, but they're just like, we're really summoning the devil out here, which is kind of lame, but I still liked it for some reason. I don't know.
I do also think there was some DMX in the soundtrack there. Which I only remember from Gone in 60 Seconds, so go figure.
They are able to finally capture the ghost, and while they're actually putting it in the trap, one of the extras that was on set for this, I actually know. His name is Brooks Young. He's a local artist from here in New Hampshire. I've had him on my radio station a number of times, and I remember him talking about being on set and being an extra in the film. There he is, like, 4 feet from where the trap is as the ghost is being sucked into it. That's pretty cool. I know somebody in a movie. Brooks, will you sign my podcast? Well, that sounds weird. Never mind.
In the original Ghostbusters, you kind of moved on into like a montage scene of them doing like being Ghostbusters. And they've proved that they can do it. Here's like quickly, hey, them doing it, them getting experience doing it. And then we move on into basically the last chapter of that film.
So they successfully are able to capture the ghost. And now nobody believes them, even though they have proof.
This one, you have the concert. They don't really know what they're doing yet. They're just beginning. They figured they trapped a ghost. Immediately, they go from there. They immediately go to the mayor, who tells them to basically pretend it never happened, and we're going to call you guys frauds and advertise that you're frauds. But you can still keep doing your research, but you know, make sure you don't advertise it or draw attention to yourself.
Then we get some more SNL bits, which, again, really brings the film to a grinding halt every freaking time they do these bits, and they go on too long.
I mean, let's talk about the good. I think the villain was great.
And our villain of the movie, Dr. Rowan North, played by Neil Casey.
Now, as opposed to the first film, this film actually has a face to the villain, as opposed to being Evil Shandor, who just basically kind of gets like almost a throwaway mention as who built the building that creates, you know, summons Gozer.
One of my favorite things about this movie is that the villain is the people that don't like the movie. I think it's really clever and it works great.
Get a little backstory about Rowan and how he works in a hotel, and that he's, I don't know if he's crazy. This I'm still kind of lost about. Why he's doing everything he's doing for the ghosts, and why they are in certain mirrors. Are these mirrors portals? And maybe I missed something in the movie, but I just don't understand his motives.
He's very kind of not so much creepy. He's interesting, but he's always mysterious. He's always like saying, you know, when the fourth cataclysm comes, you will be spared. But he comes off as kind of like harmless, but obviously he's not. And his whole plan, he's trying to break free the spirits from the other side, wreak havoc on the city just because, you know, people haven't been nice to him. Is basically his motivation.
I mentioned in my entry to the first film that there seemed to be a missing piece to the story that could explain why ghost activity was suddenly on the rise.
There is actually a person who is actively setting up devices throughout the city that basically supercharge the paranormal energy that's in the area, and that's what's basically kind of almost creating these ghosts. That's why they're all of a sudden manifesting, as opposed to in the original movies, the building itself was kind of focusing paranormal activity into the city, that it was distributing that way. This was more localized, but what ultimately he was doing was supercharging ley lines, and the concept of them pulling in ley lines for this, I thought was very, very inspired, very cool, because ley lines, I mean, I hesitate to say a real thing, but ley lines is a concept that's been around for a long time. It's not used very often in, like, kind of modern storytelling. But it's almost like if you get really deep into the mythology and, you know, the paranormal stuff, it's a concept that comes up. And I really thought that was kind of cool if they actually brought that up and actually used it rather well, I thought, in the movie. So they basically supercharged these ley lines, and where they cross and where they centered at, he had the big machine that creates the big vortex that they use at the very end of the movie.
Even if you say because of Gozer, what triggered that event at that precise moment in time? In part two, Viggo's appearance in New York via the painting is explanation enough.
The concept and visualization of ghosts living on just another side of a thin veil is great. And it's like a tiny bit of world building that I felt like either one of the previous movies could have done.
So the Ghostbusters eventually figure out that Rowan, our main bad guy, has been setting up all these different devices.
Near the end of the movie, they when they figured out the ley lines.
These guys need to be more worried about the galactic ley line, not this lame earthen ley line.
They actually found out who the main villain was or where he was at, and they go and they actually stop him.
When they eventually find him and confront him, we find out that he's just, he's crazy, he's got a god complex, he's delving into the occult, and he's just doing this because he was bullied as a child, and now he's going to bring ghosts into our world to kill everybody.
Here we see the character of Rowan is actively working to release specters from another plane of existence because he feels slighted by humanity.
Because he was bullied. That's the motivation for our main villain. I almost would have preferred a painting at this point.
I like this little twist where the current and future plots were written in the copy of the crazy dude's book. Why is this better writing?
And you can say this sounds like a ridiculous plot, but there are people in this world just like Rowan who would do this very thing were it possible.
I think his motivations were clear. He was fleshed out. He even had his own scenes by himself, and they weren't long, but they paid off.
The villain who starts as a painfully weird guy kills himself to enact his plans.
He kills himself, which is weird.
Rowan ends up committing suicide, apparently. That's dark.
You know, that's something that bears mentioning. In this movie, people were getting killed and actually harmed.
That is the most metal thing to happen in this entire franchise.
The other Ghostbusters, not so much. People aren't actually getting killed, whereas in this one, you have a guy that actually commits suicide on screen. Like, jeez.
But the Ghostbusters are able to stop the apocalypse by shutting down his giant Tesla coil of death, I guess.
I appreciate him having reversed the technology the Ghostbusters developed.
And Jill finds that there is a copy of Ghosts from Our Past that Rowan has been drawing in and where he has gotten all of his ideas.
I do kind of like the bad guy in this one, just because it felt like someone who could be a real threat in the real world, like one of those egocentric incel douchebags, you know, that's just like low self-esteem, trying to like prove himself, the world's against him kind of thing. Oh, poor me, I'm a white man.
And yeah, just I love the fact that the villain is like this like incel guy who you could very easily see loving the original movie, no offense.
Yeah, just total entitled dick.
Rowan comes back as a ghost somehow without the ionizer near him.
He, you know, of course, part of his plan was to die and then come back as a ghost.
And he possesses Abby, which is, covered in goop now, or goop draining from her.
And, it's the main villain. And, of course, he becomes a ghost. First, he possesses Abby. And Abby almost throws Holtzman out the window. Patty stops her. They have this big fight. They finally, she wrestles Abby to the floor, and she starts slapping around, almost doing the Exorcist thing.
Possessed Abby then fights with Patty and Holtz. Holtz gets thrown out the same window that Bill Murray got thrown out of and died. That's incredible that they got that very customized window fixed and replaced so quickly. Less than a day? Hours, maybe?
But Abby was okay after that. But then it basically, for whatever reason, Kevin's out, just happens to be outside. He's got this motorcycle. He's painted as Ghostbusters, and he's got a Ghostbusters uniform. He's like, throw me down a Primaton pack. Like, I don't even know what the heck he was supposed to be accomplishing. Again, he's a moron. I felt like I missed a scene there somewhere. Like, why is he all of a sudden done all of this? And why does he now want a proton pack to go do what exactly, you know?
And then he takes over our lovable sidekick, Kevin, who all he wants to do is be a Ghostbuster for some reason.
But the spirit's still out there, and it ends up possessing Kevin, which improves his character considerably.
But he's got a little moto scooter, moped, and it's Ecto-2, which is always so cute. Little moped. It's not Ecto-2 from the cartoon. That was a helicopter. I had that toy. Oh, this is a cool little moped, though.
I did like when, I forgot his name, whatever the villain, he takes over Chris Hemsworth's body.
The villain himself was kind of like this nerdy, out-of-shape guy. So now he's like got the jock body or whatever. So he's having a heck of a lot of fun with that.
And I thought that was fun because, again, he is like, he's the Zincel. And now he's in Chris Hemsworth's body, who's like the Chad. And yeah, that was funny. He's like, man, what I really should have worked out more when I was alive.
Aaron eventually figures out that Rowan committed suicide because he wants to be the leader, or believes that he will be the leader for all of the ghosts that he is going to bring into this world.
He goes back and basically turns back on the machine that they turned off. He creates this huge vortex, and all these ghosts start flying out. Really cool. Really cool scene. It's something they didn't really do in... the closest thing to it in like the original Ghostbusters is when the containment unit is turned off and all the ghosts escape. It's similar to that, but done way, way better visually.
Possessed Kevin makes it back to the hotel in Times Square, where he activates the portal and begins bringing all the ghosts into the world, first through the mirrors, and then a giant portal opens up within the basement of the hotel.
So pretty much all of this movie held up for me, except for the very final bit.
All right, the Ghostbusters are all back together. They are approaching the hotel, but there is a ton of ghosts that appear, and they are standing in their way, which, special effects, these ghosts are very, very impressive.
I mentioned in my entry to Ghostbusters 2 that I felt like there was a lack of actual Ghostbusters action. You had the courtroom scene and the fight with Viggo, and that's about it. Here we get set pieces with ghosts, sans a montage,
and you have a pretty good fight scene.
Ghostbusters is a comedy / horror film. It isn't an action flick.
And one of the best Ghostbusters fight sequences at the end of the film.
My favorite part of this whole movie was where they're fighting their way through Times Square.
There's a lot more interactiveness going on in this than in any of the other movies.
It was a long, long, long... And I should preface this by saying that I watched like the extended cut of this film, so it's like 15, 20 minutes longer than the theatrical one that I've seen before.
Especially like when you think about Ghostbusters 2, like no one was really worried about anything. It was literally the end of the world, and like it's only the end of the world in one spot that has zero effect on the people around it because everyone's just like chilling with each other, you know, outside of the building. Yeah, this one, they're literally tearing New York up.
There's all these apparitions of like Revolutionary War soldiers, pilgrims, and other historical figures. That kind of stuff was pretty cool.
These ladies were actually fighting ghosts.
I guess if I had to pick, maybe it would be the ringleader ghost. The ringleader ghost very much feels like a character from the cartoon, and for all I know, it might be. This one's a little tough in this one because they're so different and represents another one of what I think is one of the biggest missteps of this one outside of the physical comedy and sort of the angle of the comedy they decided to go for is the CG.
I like some of the glowy effects that they use at times. It's a little CG heavy for my taste, but I mean, I guess how else are you going to show some of that stuff, right?
Like, I'm sure it would have been more expensive to go practical with their ghosts. I really, really, really would have preferred that they used old school 1980s sort of effects. And I guess we'll see what they end up doing with Ghostbusters Afterlife. But that really, there's just something about just how CG the ghosts are. So,
but I don't, the CGI at the end was just, it was a lot of CGI and like none of it, I don't know. It was okay.
I will say, like a lot of modern movies, they really rely way, I'm going to keep beating this dead horse, but they rely way too much on CG for the effects. I've said it before and I'll say it again, less is more.
And it was pretty damn spectacular.
It just went on for so long, like all of the like fighting at the end, I guess. And it was just kind of like random scene after random scene.
You know, they did that entire lengthy scene earlier describing every single one of those weapons. And then Holtzman comes in and has like a totally different weapon that she did not bring to the table earlier. And this is exactly how like a lot of this other stuff could have gone down. Clearly, they knew how to write this. They just chose not to.
Just kind of wish they had done more with that.
My question is, though, the proton packs and the different guns and weapons, which there's a variety of, which is great. Proton guns originally did not kill ghosts. They were just used to control them into the trap. But a lot of these other weapons are killing ghosts and sending them. Where are they sending them? If you make a ghost explode, what happens? Where does it go? That I'm not sure they explain. But the fight scene overall is entertaining.
Well, at the climax, they have this long, but it seemed like it took a while, where they're basically just being badasses, shooting ghosts and blowing them away. Like, we're not trapping any of these ghosts. What they're saying is you can just blow up a ghost, and it's fine. But at the same time, they're also trapping ghosts. But the trapping of the ghost didn't seem to be relevant.
But overall, I really liked the fight scene for the most part, because it's just like, use everything you have. It feels a little more epic.
So after defeating all the ghosts, the Ghostbusters are heading into the hotel for their final confrontation with Kevin/Rowan. And we have to do another bit where Aaron slips, because why not? Then we have another bit that, again, brings everything to a screeching halt with Frank or Kevin from the office just in the lobby. These bits don't work.
Now, going to the stupid parts of the movie. The dancing.
Things like that. And then there's Chris Hemsworth does some dancing and other people do dancing, and that was all good fun.
Oh God, the dancing.
The dance number was not needed.
Kevin, who is still possessed by Rowan, is now approached by the authorities, the military, the police, and he easily subdues them with a whole dance segment, which, again, feels out of place here.
They could have cut that out.
Followed by more bits. Just stop with the bits, okay?
If this guy has superpowers to take over bodies, he's using it to dance instead of, I don't know, destroying the city?
And again, I like the idea of Rowan, a normal person fed up with the world of the living, looking to take it down and not conquer it.
But the actual culmination's like something they did very well, and this is something Ghostbusters 2 I think did poorly, was the idea of possession. And since it wasn't the focal point, I think it worked a lot better because it was played to draw, basically to create the tension.
The biggest battle is against hordes of ghosts, which makes the short final battle much more acceptable.
That said, I thought the ending, towards the very end, things kind of go off the rails for me.
Eventually, the Ghostbusters are able to convince Rowan to leave Kevin's body, and then we get the, what form do you want me to take?
I even like the final form he took, actually personifying the ghost logo.
If the Ghostbusters are going to be attacked by something giant, it may as well be their own logo.
My favorite ghost was probably the Ghostbusters logo coming alive.
This time he starts out small and cute, the ghost from the Ghostbuster logo.
Though we have now officially reached Godzilla 98 territory.
And there's this really weird moment where he turns into a cartoon version of the Ghostbusters logo.
It was the most fun of the creatures. It was super meta.
But then that quickly becomes big and distorted and angry.
I thought that was actually clever, having that be the big ghost.
For some reason, I always thought that ghost had a name, and I could not remember it, but I'm pretty sure Rob, in one of the last entries, said Moogly. And Rob, you're the expert. All right, I'm going to take your word for it, that Rowan turns into Moogly.
And I do look that he looks like the boogeyman from Nightmare Before Christmas.
I mean, sure, there was a ton of ghosts that didn't really make sense in New York City, like the pirates and other randos, but the bad guy becoming the logo was basically an FU to critics. I mean, at that point, they didn't care, I guess. I don't know.
So why is Rowan, I guess, a higher tier level of these ghosts? Why can he change form? Why can he do more than the other ghosts?
The design of that was on point, looking like he was pulled straight from the opening of the animated series.
That was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen.
So after he turns into a giant Moogly, the hotel is pretty much destroyed. The portal is getting bigger. More ghosts are showing up. The Ghostbusters try to cross the streams like the first film, but that does not work.
And then they do cross the streams, but it doesn't work. I thought that was nice. And then they have to do the nuke with the Slimer.
Basically shoot our proton blasts at the cylinder on the top, supercharge them so they explode when Ecto-1 goes into the vortex. We could actually create a total protonic reversal, which is a callback from the original movie that was funny. Turn the vortex into a giant trap. So that's what they do. They corral Slimer into actually driving straight into the vortex and then do this trick shot where they shoot these...
I believe it's Holtz that deduces that they could use Ecto-1's reactor as a makeshift bomb, and then they would detonate it as a nuclear explosion inside the vortex. It wouldn't harm the city, but would reverse it and pull all the ghosts back into the nether realm. No, that's Mortal Kombat. The afterlife? Wherever the hell these ghosts are coming from.
Of course, then they trap it, and basically... The big ghost, he like braces himself against the buildings and is, you know, and they're like, well, we got to like loosen his grip. So what they do, but basically they shoot him, they shoot this ghost in the balls. He's got to like hold his balls or whatever. I mean, he's a ghost, doesn't even have that kind of anatomy, but whatever.
We beat the main bad guy by shooting him in the nuts. Okay.
He actually grabs hold of Abby and drags her in with him.
Aaron ties herself to... I don't know, something with a hook and dives in after her.
At the end of the movie, Melissa McCarthy's character is like carried into like the ghost dimension or whatever. And then Kristen Wiig's character like jumps in to save her.
I liked this. This whole sequence where she's actually going to rescue Abby is actually really good. Really well done, I thought. Very well shot and executed. The other Ghostbusters, they're pulling her out after that she grabs her.
And... that the potential to be cool, but it kind of... I wish we saw something of substance beyond that into the ghost world. Like, that could have been, like, a cool thing to set up for a sequel that's not happening. But it's just, like, greenness and, like...
Somehow their hair gets turned white. I'm not sure how that happened, but it did.
But why do they have white hair? Why did that happen?
Yeah, I don't know if they, like, aged or something. It was unclear what exactly had happened.
Just because they were in a vortex leading to the ghost world? It sucked all the pigment out of their hair? Are they supposed to be scared? Or are they supposed to be old? I'm not sure.
I guess they were like traveling to the other dimension but didn't quite make it. So I think that could have been a cool place for this film to go. And I think this would have been before Stranger Things. So, you know, they could have like done that first. Like, because in my mind, it's going to be very similar to The Upside Down. But yeah.
But they get rescued, you know, everybody's happy.
After everything that has happened and how serious it was and all the stakes and how high they were, again, we have more bits with Kevin.
Honestly, the movie probably should have ended there, but it didn't. It then, like, really lingered after the climax. A little too long, I thought.
Bits, like, it goes on too long. Well, now that the Ghostbusters have saved the city, there's no denying that there are ghosts. The mayor and his assistant are 100% behind them. They were able to set up shop in the hook and ladder fire station like the original videos. Ernie Hudson has his cameo. He is Patty's uncle. Oh, hey, Ernie. You did almost as much here in this film as you did in the original. And that's the end of the movie.
Why is 2016 the best Ghostbusters movie?
Ghostbusters Answer the Call is a fun movie that delivers on the laughs and some great action.
Well, my final thoughts is pretty much my initial thoughts. It isn't a bad movie. It's not a good movie. It's just, it's there.
But all in all, it's a fine movie. It's a decent popcorn flick.
If I never see this movie again, it's fine with me.
It's one of those movies that if it was on, it wouldn't annoy me. But I don't know that I would actually sit down and actually intentionally go watch it again.
There were funny moments. There were things that did make me laugh on the second viewing through, so I am glad that we did watch this again.
So overall, I really like this movie for what it is.
I mean, there's no way it could ever top the original. That's a classic.
Maybe not as groundbreaking as the original, but it's a pretty good comedy, and I laughed a good bit.
So we had a lot of the same elements that they were trying to use to create the 2016. I just feel like they didn't quite do it.
As I mentioned, I turned this movie off the first time I watched it. I finally finished. I don't think I missed anything either way.
For my favorite Ghostbuster, I think I'll go with Abby. Patty was a close second. Aaron I liked initially, but the whole her and Kevin dynamic, it was just, it got weird and I didn't like her character. It started to get more annoying. And Holtzman, I liked her, the aspect and idea of her and the creations that she was coming up with, but she was just too weird and it didn't fit for at least me. So I'll go with Abby. As long as she wasn't doing a bit. If she was doing a bit, she wasn't even in character, so it didn't count.
Nobody likes Aaron, the Venkman of the movie. The people in the movie, the fans, me, nobody likes her. She was written perfectly for this role. She abandoned her friend and her dreams, but she clearly does not belong in this uber-professional world. And she actually has a knack for ghost hunting. So Abby, our Ray, replaces her with Jillian, the Egon. There's a reason why these two work so well together. And it's because they're both not assholes, and they are both genuinely working towards the same goal, and they believe in that goal, despite the fact that nobody else does.
My favorite Ghostbuster, I'm partial to Kate McKinnon. I think her being a crazy person was great. I think they ask her at some point, like, I have a couple uses for a body. I mean, just like the stuff that she says that are non sequiturs. That's what makes the movie, again, her improv could have been cut a little bit.
And this is actually something I think really detrimental to the whole film, is there is a lack of professionalism on any of the characters in this movie. I'm not even talking about just the Ghostbusters. Like, even the scenes with the mayor in Ghostbusters, he doesn't know what's going on, but he was acting realistically. Whereas the mayor in 2016 Ghostbusters is acting like a cartoon. Kevin's incompetent. Holtzman is off the wall insane. Abby and Aaron are always fighting each other over, you know, in front of people. Patty kind of holds it together better than any of the other ones.
And the plot and the fact that you had like a main bad guy who was just a guy.
But overall, I really like the movie.
Ultimately, what made this movie not work for me was I don't think it knew what it wanted to be. I think it had not enough creative control to rein it back and give it direction. Was it trying to be a Ghostbusters film or was it trying to be Bridesmaids?
And I think it would have been better if they didn't have to like shoehorn so many references to the original Ghostbusters. And like, maybe if they would have made it a continuation instead of a reboot, it would have hit better.
If you're going to be a silly, goofy, almost parody movie, then do that. Jump in. You would probably have exceeded and been a very successful movie. But it also was attempting to be serious. And then all of the serious parts of the movie and the stakes were set and the movie would be going along, but then it would be completely derailed by the SNL skits. You can be silly. You can do things like you did in Ghostbusters 1 and 2. And I think Corey and a few of the other people from Ghostbusters 2 were complaining about how the silliness and things that Bill Murray were doing were derailing the film. I think this film got derailed far more because the comedy and the bits did not match at all with the seriousness or the tone. Just, it didn't work, at least for me.
But there's a lot to like in this movie, and I don't get why people think, like, hate it. I don't even get why people say this movie's just okay.
Maybe it worked for you, and if it did, great, I'm happy. But for me, it kept pulling me out of the movie, and I think that's why I'm frustrated, because I really wanted to like this movie.
There's a lot of callbacks, but, you know, I wonder, would that whole thing been better if there was no original Ghostbusters? Would this movie have been better or worked at all if there wasn't the original Ghostbusters to pull off of? And I am on the fence about that. I don't think it would have. I don't know, maybe. it does end up being a pretty weak film.
Really just derails it over and over and over again throughout the entire film, which is very, very unfortunate.
It's got a lot of good bits that are funny.
There was just stuff in this one that didn't quite gel for me.
They left too much space for all these girls to give like 13 extra lines to each scene.
And again, that's not to say that it should ruin the fun for anybody else.
This movie does end on a good note. The sandwich gag was pretty funny and dumb, and I appreciated the awkward speeches and the Ernie Hudson cameo.
But this one's really not as bad as a lot of people make it out to be.
Now, having watched it again through a fresher lens, I have to say this film did things that I previously criticized the first two films of not doing, making it feel like I was getting the remake I was kind of hoping for.
Now that I've actually seen this third film, I can finally triangulate my problem with the franchise, which is I do not like the Ghostbusters format. I don't like the lack of any real horror, the idiot, the insanely extended skits, the montage, the forced world-ending third act, and I especially don't like the hella awkward romantic relationships.
The two creepiest parts for me, when the demon ghost first had possessed the mannequin, inanimate object coming at you, that is creepy. The other part was when the balloons first came back and like peeked around the corner. Again, inanimate object that shouldn't be engaging and looking at you. That was very creepy.
I haven't complained much about this movie because on the whole, every complaint that I do have is legitimately part of the Ghostbusters format. Everything you don't like about this movie is straight out of the previous two movies, so I can't really blame this third film for being like, you know what, I'm gonna copy a copy. Because that's apparently the Ghostbusters way.
I don't have the love for it that I have for the others, but there are people out there who this is their Ghostbusters film, and we absolutely shouldn't take that away from them.
If the idea of female Ghostbusters bothers you, then one, you're an ass, and two, I don't remember hearing gripes about Kylie Griffin, who predates these ladies by 20 years, but the internet is much louder nowadays.
And it's funny to me, and I don't know, like maybe my sense of humor just sucks, but I think this movie's great.
I will say, I do think that they made a few big missteps with this one. The main one, of course, is that they leaned even more into the comedy aspect to the point where it felt more like a spoof of the Ghostbusters than an actual Ghostbusters movie at times.
I mean, we know that much of this movie was improvised.
I like how all the characters have their own personalities that aren't carbon copies of the original cast.
It feels very much like they were trying to build another original Ghostbusters cast.
Not one of the actresses can be seen as a reflection of the original Ghostbusters.
So this movie felt like the creators of it had like a really good idea of what they wanted to create. And then the studio is like, here's all these references you need to include. And I think their inclusion of those was kind of hit or miss.
Also, towards the end, when all the ghosts are running free, it feels like the art designer could have added a little extra color to the blues and greens floating around. Could have made for some wonderful eye candy.
Is that Slimer in the hot dog stand?
Slimer did not need to be in this movie.
Oh, hey, it's Slimer in the hot dog stand.
That was a bit much.
And speaking of green, it was nice to see Slimer again, even if he was kind of a dick. But I guess he was in the first one as well.
Through all this, you have kind of guest appearances by Slimer.
Well, there's Slimer. They made him a bit more grotesque, and oh, he's stealing the car. Oh, that's great. Hope they have insurance.
Of course you gotta have Slimer. I've mentioned I don't much care for Slimer. I don't hate him. It's just he has the time of his life in this movie. I think even when he finally gets like sent back to the Netherrealm, he's like happy as a clown. So, you know, good on Slimer. You had some fun.
I kind of like how they use Slimer. It's kind of, I don't like that we keep seeing Slimer necessarily in everything Ghostbusters, because like he's not really a big part of the first movie. But I thought it was pretty funny how he's just like driving around aimlessly with a nuke on the top of a car, and then there's a Lady Slimer for some reason.
There's Slimer again with a Mrs. Slimer. Whoa, possess balloons? Well, that's creepy. And when they're shooting them with the proton packs, so much damage is done with the beams from the proton packs, but yet these balloons are taking forever to pop.
I mean, even the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, which at least was like a giant parade balloon.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
They even managed to bring the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man to the, but he's a balloon.
Oh, hey, he worked in a cameo for Stay Puft. Because, you know, Stay Puft. He was great in that first movie.
And for a while there, he actually has the Ghostbusters trapped for a minute. But
and then I didn't necessarily hate how they had the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in there, because it was like Macy Thanksgiving Day parade balloons. Like, they didn't try and shoot a horn how, you know, he was in the first one.
So that, I guess that kind of worked as reference, but yeah, some of those things, like, I feel like they keep leaning on that crutch a little bit too much. Hoping that's not going to be the case with the next movie.
They're trying to do some fan service. I get it. Okay, cool.
I feel like not having it connected to the original movies was also a mistake.
And while we're talking about mythos, let's talk about one minor gripe I have with the film. Now, this is not something that would have made it a better film in any way whatsoever, but I honestly feel like the script could have easily worked in the original Ghostbusters having existed and operated in New York over 30 years ago.
But they at least had cameos from most of the original cast members that were still around.
What were some other references? There was, you know, all of the cameos were fine.
Oh, hey, that's a local New England comedian. That's Lenny Clark as a Boston Red Sox baseball player. He's a great guy. Good to see you, Lenny. I know two people in this movie. That's awesome. I feel special.
Almost the entire Bill Murray sequence is worthless.
I do like that Bill Murray's an anti-ghost guy. You know, the humor in that's really shallow, but hey, it's a good callback.
A lot of the original, you know, actors make an appearance.
Bill Murray is playing a paranormal debunker, Dr. Martin Heiss, or Hayes. Either way, he's an asshole, or he's playing Bill Murray. We don't know, because this is just how Bill Murray is.
Who I think gets killed in the movie. It's kind of glossed over.
Did they just kill Bill Murray? I mean, well, by accident, but is he dead? Probably not the worst thing for the movie.
Bill Murray's was a lot longer than anyone else's. Don't know why.
There's also the interesting sort of happenstance of having as much of the original cast from the 84 film as possible making guest appearances, but as different characters.
R.I.P. Harold Ramis.
Well, there's our first cameo, a bust of Harold Ramis. Oh, we miss you, buddy.
The cabbie, a.k.a. Dan Aykroyd.
I think my favorite one was Dan Aykroyd's.
I don't go to Chinatown, I don't drive wackos, and I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
It was kind of lame that he's like, I don't believe in, I'm not as scared of no ghost or whatever.
Dan Aykroyd's scene was awesome. That was really good. And I think he was executive producer. I think I saw him in the credits after the movie.
Oh, there's Dan Aykroyd as a taxi driver making his cameo.
But that was funny that he's like a taxi driver in the middle of like this chaotic scene of paranormal activity. And he's like, they want to like go someplace. And he's like, that's about a block further than I'm wanting to drive right now. So later. I thought that was pretty funny.
That was pretty fun.
I'm not sure about that decision. You know, I think would it have been better if this film was what Afterlife is going to be and was sort of the next generation of Ghostbusters? Probably.
You have Janine, the actress that plays Janine. She's a receptionist at one of the hotels they go to. You know, the voice, and when she does some of the lines and, you know, for the movie, you know, because she's still a receptionist at the hotel. It's contrasted well with, like, Kevin. It's like, why couldn't we have someone be more like Janine, you know? Janine was pretty cool.
Oh, why, hello, Annie Potts, hotel receptionist. Good to see you. You're not Janine, but, you know, it's a nice little cameo again.
I don't know why you wouldn't keep it in the same world. You know, the comic books have certainly done crossovers since this film where the different Ghostbusters teams come together, which is entertaining. It's fun to see Ray and Holtzman get together, which, again, is a thing that would have been entertaining to actually see.
If only Bill Murray hadn't been such a dick, maybe we have gotten the Ghostbusters 3 movie that we really wanted instead of a remastered game from 2009. But you'll hear more about that in a future Podcasters Assembled episode.
If you pay close attention to certain details in the story, you could easily slid in references to Spangler and Stance's research into the paranormal. There was even a bit in the scene with the mayor that could have explained what happened to the original team, putting the cat back in the bag, as they said. Again, this isn't a make or break thing for me, but the pieces were there, and it could have been easy enough to do. strengthen the already existing mythos without hitting the reset button.
So I guess there's still that possibility maybe down the road. I don't know. Marvel is playing with the multiverse. I wouldn't be sad if the Ghostbusters films decided to, but I could see it enraging the fans further, and maybe they want to avoid that.
I do think that if they really want to make this a long-lasting franchise, the coolest way to do that would be to take a nod from the IDW comics and do something like Ghostbusters International, where you've got a whole network of busters around the world investigating paranormal events. You could have one movie set in Mexico during the Day of the Dead, where, you know, they have to stop like some resurrected Aztec emperor, maybe, or one where you could take on yokai in Japan, or hell, you could even have one set in Egypt with ancient pharaohs rising from the dead or something.
To be honest, I'd love to see the next wave of Ghostbusters not be all men or all women, but a very diverse crowd. I'm sure that'll ruffle some feathers as well, but too bad. It's time.
The movie actually has a post-credit scene.
We get a few post-credit scenes. We get the cool ghost bear trap, which teleports ghosts somewhere. I think she says Jersey.
In the credits, Sigourney Weaver actually makes a appearance as Holtzman's mentor or whatever.
Sigourney Weaver has her cameo as Holt's mentor.
It's kind of funny. She's a very mad scientist looking getup, because Holtzman's always kind of like this mad scientist thing going too. But she's more of like a stern, almost Frankensteinish person. So it's fun seeing some of the original cast kind of make little cameos.
And then at the end, we have the Zool Stinger,
where there's a hint at Zool.
That will never happen.
Which I doubt will ever be followed up on at this point.
I would watch a sequel if they made it. Or if they like somehow brought it into the like other Ghostbusters film chronology, like that'd be cool with me.
Unless this movie is somehow connected to the new one. I mean, for all we know, the next movie ends with a reveal that there's a whole ghost-busting multiverse. Who knows?
I'm glad they wrote this movie off in the canon, and the Ghostbusters are to be forgotten like the end of the movie, barring a cameo by Sigourney Weaver.
I had certain expectations just because of growing up with the original movies and what I expected and what it came out as. My friends that had never grown up with the Ghostbuster movies prefer this movie over the original ones. I think nostalgia is certainly helping me with that and holding the other two above this one.
I definitely like it more than the second one.
Oh, well, actually, one last thing. Is it better or worse than Ghostbusters 2? That one's hard.
I think it pales in comparison to definitely the first film, and I would put it behind the second one.
I'm going to say that it's marginally better than Ghostbusters 2. I mean, Ghostbusters 2 has all the original people. The humor's different, but you put a gun to my head and I had to watch one or the other, it would be the 2016 Ghostbusters.
I eventually got through it all, but it was an effort.
I will probably never watch this film again, unless when my kid grows up and he wants to watch it. Sure, I'll sit down and watch it with him, but it's not that good of a movie, unfortunately.
It's got that going for it. It's a low bar, but it made it.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed that we didn't get a sequel to this. I would have loved to watch it.
I will say, though, it does not deserve the amount of shit and ratings bombing that it had received. It's not that great of a movie, but it does not deserve to be shit on as much as everyone else on the internet has.
If the line, "Ain't no bitches gonna hunt no ghosts," speaks to who you are, then you're an outdated relic that needs to get with the times.
Either way, though, I'm really looking forward to Ghostbusters Afterlife.
All this aside, I am looking forward to the new film. Ghostbusters has a lot of potential, but they need to get out of this stupid format.
From everything I've seen, it looks like they've really got the right approach with this one. Paul Rudd's in it. A couple of the Stranger Things kids, I believe.
The trailers show a lot of references, but I'm really hopeful that it's a different take on the franchise, which is a big ask since the new producer is the son of the original producer.
The possibilities here are really endless if they play their cards right.
Hopefully he doesn't follow too closely in Daddy's footsteps.
I'm hoping there's more of the creepy elements this time around, and I like that it's not set in New York City, it looks like. And yeah, I like the approach they're going for, and passing the torch to a new generation.
So those are my thoughts on the 2016 Ghostbusters.
So that's what I've got about Ghostbusters 2016. Please go check out all the other contributors to this this entry. Help support them.
Felt like I was supposed to be, like, funny.
We'll see you next time. I think the next time we got the video game.
We'll be back with a couple bonus episodes about the real Ghostbusters 1986 animated series and also the Ghostbusters video game from 2009, which was loosely based on the never-created Ghostbusters 3 movie.
Now, I like the video game. You know, spoilers, I like the video game. I don't know that I want to go and play the entire thing, but again, just because I don't know that I have the time to. I'll figure something out because I really want to talk about the video games.
And if you have time, go check out Podcasters Disassembled, where I take Chris, Justin, and Bobby from FN Cultured, and I force them to watch the 1975 and 1986 The Ghostbusters, the one with the monkey. Yeah, that's a trip.
So until then, stay safe. Bye-bye.
I feel like a very serious review. Anyway, bye.
So until next time, podcasters, assemble.
The Ghostcasters will return in Ghostbusters, the video game.
Are you troubled by strange noises in the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread in your basement or attic?
Have you or your family actually seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Just pick up the phone and call the professionals.
Call the Ghostbusters. Something strange in your neighborhood.
I swear it.
Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Now she calls my name.
Lock the exits!
Don't let him escape with her. Hit him with fire.
Who you gonna call?
Podcasters Assemble is a production of the We Can Make This Work, Probably, podcast network. Find more of our shows at probablywork.com and learn how to contribute to future episodes of Podcasters Assemble by looking us up on Twitter and Instagram at Casters Assemble or joining our Discord page. Link in the show notes. Submissions are always open. Intro written by Justin Aki. Music by Deft Stroke Sound. Voiceover by a guy in a basement with three daughters who's just glad he's not on food stamps. This episode was edited by Eric Slater. Thank you to everyone who was able to contribute to this episode. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to where you can find them all online. Thank you.
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.
We're the Ghostbusters. I'm Spencer. He's Tracy. I'm Kong.
I don't know anyone else's name off the top of my head right now. But yeah, it was good.
In terms of favorite line, I can't think of a single one off the top of my head from this movie. I cannot. So I guess I don't have... Well, outside of the... I don't know if it was... What was it? A race thing or a lady thing? I really didn't like that line. I felt like that was a bit forced.
But the original movie is just like... It's like a... I don't know if I want to say conservative, Republican. I don't know. It's just like a... It's a very... It's like the wet dream of someone that really believes in capitalism is the best way I can say it, because you've got like these three white dudes who are like well educated, and then they like are like masquerading as blue collar people, but they're really not. And then one of them is also like a disgusting pervert, and like he's real gross with women. And then the villain of the movie is the EPA. Yeah. I could just see the villain of this movie like being on board with all that.
So the first time seeing it, that was actually the first time reviewing. Damn it.
One of my favorite things about this movie is that the villain is the people who don't like the movies or don't like it at all. One of the things... Eric, excuse all this.
Erin had originally co-authored this book called Ghosts of Our Past with her childhood friend Abby Gates. Her childhood... And then they do encounter the malevolent...
So one of the...
I do kind of like that the bad guy in this one...
Honestly, half the scenes could have been on...
Hoo boy. All right.
Malevolent. Malevolent.
But I forgot all the actresses' names. The, like, beginning where... I can't think of what it's they're in, like, the house. Yeah, that's very descriptive. Eric, I just did a lot of stream of consciousness, and I really hope you can use literally any of that.
So the Ghostbusters eventually figure out that Rowan has been setting all these devices up on fault lines and that he is right at the... Yep.
I'm sorry. I'm very tired.
See, now I'm even questioning. Yeah, no, it was 2016. Okay. Wow, my brain. Okay.
She abandoned her friend and dreams, but she clearly does not belong in this Uber for him.
That's not her first name. I think her first name's... No, I don't remember. I'm not even going to guess. Try to guess what her first name was. But Holtzman is how I remembered her name. That's her last name.
All right, here we go.
We can actually watch the makeshift group turn into something instead of having an amazing... Now that we...
Eric, I think you're editing this. Or maybe it's me helping you out. Because Tyler and Corey are busy or whatever. So, once more into the fray.
So it was all planned. Here comes the truck. Hello, Cassie. There we go.
And finally, when Kate McKinnon plays the farting EVP and says, "Is it more or less disgusting if I tell you it came out the front?" Yeah, there's a queef joke in this movie.
Podcasters, assemble.
Bustin' makes me feel good.